This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, as luck would have it, I'm Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan Eats the News. Let's keep this snappy. I'm insulin dependent, and I've just had a massive Yorkie bar. The Oscars are in crisis amid accusations of racism, given the lack of black performers shortlisted for the top prizes, which is why the decision to get Nick Griffin to host next year's awards is beginning to look like a mistake. It's a shame because he's actually a great dancer. He's old school. He sings, he tells jokes. It's amazing. People of red hair are also criminally underrepresented at the Academy Awards this year, but that is widely considered to be fine. It's actually okay. Jeremy Corbyn has unveiled a solution for the future of the multi-billion pound Trident submarine project. Now, this is absolutely true. We keep the subs to save the jobs, which is groovy, but they won't carry a nuclear weapon on board. So we have submarines, but no nuclear weapons. That is an actual thing. Wow. I mean, it's not clear what's going to be on the boats, but it is guessed a couple of cinemas, a pool and duty-free shopping, which I think's lovely. Labour's inquiry into why they lost the election is that Ed Miliband was not trusted on the economy and immigration and was not considered prime ministerial material. Well, they've really fixed that with Jeremy Corbyn, haven't they? Wow. Getting Jeremy Corbyn to sort out the Labour Party is like getting Charlie Sheen to sort out the Playboy Mansion. It's like getting Pete Doherty to tackle the international trade in heroin. Now, the inquiry into the tragic death of ex-Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko has reported that Vladimir Putin most probably approved his murder. However, the Kremlin deny this. So there you go. They weren't involved. They've said so in a statement. Just leave it. Leave it! There's a statement! I should mention a new study which suggests that laughing makes you thin, which means after an hour with my two guests today, I'm going to be more emaciated than Victoria Beckham. Yes, with me are two men who are so funny, they're actually toxic. Their comedy is dangerous and bad for you. We have the iconic Scottish comic, Leo Kearse, and England's proudest comedy son, David Whitney. I think it's a mistake to let them write the intros to these things. David Whitney and Leo Kearse.
I'm also from Scotland.
So great to have you here. Lads, welcome. We're going to get straight into the news. I just want to throw in a quick thing, and it's just related to what I've just done. I've just had a sandwich. I ate a sandwich, which I think is not a bad start to the day.
It's the best thing, yeah.
Well,
it's the
done
best
me.
Thing to do with a sandwich.
And I had it on white bread, and I've been eating white bread since the beginning of the year. Never been happier.
Is this one of these things like you know, some people do dry January? Are you doing like white January?
Yes. Well, that sounds a bit Nick Griffin actually.
It does, yeah.
You've
yeah.
Gone very new.
Are you,
with
are you
that.
On the Oscar selection committee?
I'm afraid it looks like I am. Well, listen, that's a great starting off point for our show because, of course, the biggest showbiz story of the week is the complete carnage surrounding the shortlist of nominees at the Oscars, the Academy Awards, that features very few people who are not white. Dave Whitney, not only you are a tremendous purveyor of laughter and mirth, you're also an actor as well. Where do you stand on this, big guy?
Well, I think we should also declare that I am also white, so probably not allowed to talk about it. It's hard to say something funny about it, frankly. Yeah, there should be more diversity in the awards. Mathematically,
well, listen, it's
interesting. There are probably more white leading men, so mathematically aren't the chances that more of them are going to get nominated. But isn't that the root of the problem?
Wait a minute. Now, listen, the head of jury, the jury, is a female and is black. Chris Rock, the brilliant comedian, is hosting it. Last time I checked, he was a black man. There is a counter argument that actually it's just that the performances from non-white actors were not particularly outstanding this year.
Well, I went to drama school with Tom Hardy, and he has done his best to become black, but he has not quite managed it. So
right.
maybe an Oscar would actually debilitate his ability to cross that bridge.
Well, I think there's always an argument for that. Now, Leo Kearse, you've been to, is it Mexico?
I've been to Mexico, yeah.
So you're so tan, you're almost a minority now.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, yeah. If you combine
feeling.
It with the Scottishness, you know, I've got the accent and the strange food that English people don't want to eat. So yeah. I basically am.
The Academy, you wouldn't even get on a long list with the Academy.
No.
You're a member of too many groups.
I saw some of the films that they're saying have been passed over for Oscar nominations. Films such as Creed, Straight Outta Compton, and like a Will Smith one, I can't remember what it's called. And they're like, you know, is this racism? It's like, no, those are just rubbish films. You know what I mean?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I don't know. The question is Hollywood racist? I mean, I don't know. Looking at it, the wider picture of it, are there enough black movie action movie stars, for example? Is there who is the equivalent that is a black actor that like would have the billing of Tom Cruise or Clooney?
Will Smith.
Yeah, Will Smith. Anyone else? So everyone says Will Smith. Always Will Smith.
Yeah.
Will Smith's brother.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah,
he's got a fair bit of work.
And then it gets, you know, then it's sort of just sort of like not rich pickings after that.
Samuel L. Jackson.
That's it. The cast of Desmond's. Yeah.
You know, I actually went past a barber in Peckham called Desmond's, and I got quite teary eyed about the passing of that TV show. It was comedy greatness, and I think it should be revived.
Listen, I mean, I think as comedians, you are always being judged by your audience. And then there are, of course, annual awards for comedians and stuff like that. The bottom line is it's very hard to get awards right. For those jurors, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. Because what you don't want next year is a lot of tokenism.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I'd say, I mean, in the UK, people are quite wise about not being racist. You know, racism's like seen as like, you know, a bad thing, quite rightly so.
Yeah.
But classism is very much in action. And I think now, there's sort of discrimination against work. And when people say diversity now, so like they'll sign and book ethnic acts as a mark of diversity, but they'll still be the same sort of middle class voices.
Yeah, I think that's a very good one. Well, listen, this one is obviously going to run, and it clearly is going to taint this year's award ceremony, and they're going to have to do something to address it without what would be compromising the critical judgment of the jurors to choose the best actors. It's a real headache. Speaking of iconic, brilliant black performers, Jamie Foxx is in the news, obviously not because of the Oscars, because he's a black man, so he's not even allowed.
But he has got an Oscar.
Well, it's a good point, by the way. But how did he probably stole
it? He had to pretend to be blind.
That's exactly it. So here's the thing.
Don't just get it for being.
I don't think of it as heroic, says Jamie Foxx, as he describes the moment he rescued
his Oscar.
Well, no, the moment that he rescued a driver from a burning truck with seconds to spare. The Oscar-winning actor, as you rightly say, was at his home in Thousand Oaks in California when he heard a car crash. He ran to the scene with another Good Samaritan, and he helped pull the victim, Brett Kyle, from the vehicle. Seconds later, it blew up. I mean, it was, you know, it was a heroic moment. So here's the question, chaps. Have you ever done anything heroic?
Yeah, but I don't like to talk about it, you know. It's like Jamie Foxx. He's like, he doesn't describe it as heroic because you can't come out after doing something like that that's obviously heroic. I mean, rescuing somebody from a truck that then blows up seconds later, that's definitely heroic, you know what I mean? But you can't come out and be like, yeah, check me out, I'm so heroic. You know what I mean?
If he remembered to put his cape on before doing it, I think he could have really, got some more mileage out of it. But if he's just in the woolly hat and sweats that he's in this photograph, I mean, how can he? You can't be heroic in that type of outfit. You need lycra.
But it's a lovely thing that he's broadly speaking saved someone's life, and I'm slightly envious that I haven't done that. I mean, the only thing I can think of having done is, I remember once there was an older lady, and we're all waiting at the pedestrian crossing to cross, and she sort of just like stepped out before she should have, and the car's on its way, and I sort of pulled her back. And it was weird because she didn't thank me. I don't know whether I saved her life, but I think I may have prevented some kind of incident.
Yeah.
And she just sort of shrugged me off and then went off and didn't say thank you. Once I saw her again recently and I pushed her into the traffic and she's no longer with us, God rest her soul. But
manners, you know, can what I save mean? Your life.
Thank you. I recently turned down the screen brightness on someone's iPhone so that they got a better battery performance.
Nice.
But I haven't. Can't say, apart from those two quite major things, there's nothing I've done
and
to really.
They really seem to have been red letter days because they have stuck in your memory, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, the iPhone is the big one, obviously. I did also, somebody had a bit of trouble with the fingerprint scanner on their iPhone as well.
And did got you that going.
Well, what they were doing is they were actually pressing onto it rather than just resting their thumb.
What an idiot.
Because you know what I mean?
Do you help that person or do
well,
you
Well, I
down?
Was torn, but you're an idiot. This is Darwinism in action.
Yeah, if you can't open your own iPhone, maybe you deserve to
But
die.
What it was is that deep sense of satisfaction that you've transformed someone's life by allowing them to use an interface which reads their fingerprint in order to open their smartphone rather than enter a long multi-digit number is just too rewarding to walk away from. And yeah. Leo's with me on this one.
Yeah.
But have you, I mean, I suppose, can I say one thing? You guys.
Society has made it.
Here's what you do. You actually save lives every night of the year in the stand-up circuit, on stage, with laughter, healing. We found out this week that laughter makes you thin.
The day before New Year's Eve. Yeah.
But there's something quite generous and generous-spirited about being a comedian. You are givers of
pleasure.
There
is absolutely nothing generous about being a stand-up comedian. We drive the length and breadth of the country to show off for 20 minutes or 1 hour breaks in order that we can go back to bed and consider that we've done something worthy with our lives while counting our money. It's about as self-indulgent as any profession could possibly be. I don't know what would be more self-indulgent. Probably being a policeman. I can't think of anything else.
I disagree. I think you are prostitutes of the mind.
Well, yeah, yeah?
Giving the punters a good time.
Fuck my brain.
So there you go. But there's literally no heroism in your. Can you think of anything?
I had a similar thing to you. I stopped somebody getting their bag stolen up at Finsbury Park, and the thing is, I went in too soon.
God, you could do that all day long. That's a full time job.
Yeah, I went in too soon, so I just looked because he hadn't grabbed the bag yet. And it's not like I wasn't reading his mind and could tell, like. But he was going for the. A woman was standing, sort of talking to somebody. She had a bag of shopping here and a handbag on the other side. You know, on the ground. And this guy went down. I saw him like going in, like going for the bag. And just as his hand touched it, I ran up and like, you know, I grabbed him and bustled him away and stuff. And I just looked like a mental person who'd grabbed somebody for no reason. So same sort of thing as you, stopping the woman crossing the road. I didn't get thanked. I got everybody looking at me like I was.
Well, here's the thing. That's the problem. Is that sometimes if you help someone, you can actually get in trouble and you can get in hot water. And then there's a terrible, terrible viral from a couple of years ago in China of a child that was knocked down by a car and was lying in the gutter, helpless, while many, many people walk past. And it was a national scandal in China, and a lot of people just said, look, this is the terrible dark side of Chinese life, Chinese culture, Chinese society, that people are so insulated, so secretive, the Communist Party control, that, you know, just any sense of human emotion is gone. Anyway, on further analysis, many people were actually interviewed who had walked past, and they said, look, I'm not going to touch that child, because if I pick that child up, take it to the family, or take it to... Well, I might just have to keep it, correct, in an underground lair. But no, what they are concerned that they will be liable for what happened and sued by the family, because there's actually a massive suing culture and extortion and bribery and all of that stuff.
How about suing somebody who left your baby dying in a gutter?
Yeah, I mean,
it seems ridiculous that you're more worried about being done for helping than not helping.
So what happens is you scoop the child off the floor, take it home or take it to the hospital, and then the family sue you because they say it's your fault. And that's purely corruption. It's purely just to get money.
Right.
And that's why people just walk on by.
Yeah, yeah.
That they don't need that hassle.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For example, I mean, I'm a complete coward, but let's say if you saw somebody being, I mean, you must see this at night after shows and things like that, but if you see someone being, I don't know, attacked or something, do you step in? Because, I mean, I sort of think, well, I've got small children. I kind of need be here.
Throw them in instead.
I kind of extra, yeah, definitely. I kind of extra not need to die somehow, because I feel like I'm responsible for other human beings.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't want to die generally, like regardless of how many children.
The thing is, my children need me. Netflix needs you, doesn't it? Because if anything happened to you, that's like a lot less viewing of American TV dramas.
£10 less a month that they're going to get.
Do you know what I mean?
It's gone up to £10.
And Dave, there's quite a few iconic London hostelries that would, there'd be a massive Dave Whitney-shaped hole in their lives and balance sheet.
I think you hit it on the head with the whole hitting it the right time. I think there's a lot of men wandering around every city in the world waiting for the right moment to be heroic. But you've got to, you know, there has to be that critical amount of insults towards the lady at the bar that it is now time for you to step in and look like the big man. If you step in too early, you're a thug. One insult too late, you're a coward. It's the most important tipping point of any young would-be Batman. It's very difficult. People don't realise how the politics of being a hero is so delicately balanced.
Absolutely right. You're listening to this.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Are you ready to go kick ISIS's ass? Asks Sarah Palin. As she recommends and supports Donald Trump's desire to be president of the United States of America. Now, strangely, this is a bit of a PR and political coup for Donald Trump, hard as that may be for us to imagine. Gentlemen, are we having to face the very possible reality in the near future of President Trump?
Surely not. Surely not.
I mean, he would make George W. Bush look like Nelson Mandela. It's unimaginable.
It really is. I'm sure. I mean, you know, the bigger a country is, the more morons it will have. That's just how numbers work, isn't it? Also, the more intelligent people they have.
Nicely recovered. Well done.
No, I'm just literally the volume of numbers. That's what I'm saying. But I just can't imagine. I'm yet to meet anyone. I know loads of them. Americans. I'm yet to meet anybody who could look you in the eye and tell you that they think that Trump is a good idea. And, you know, being endorsed by Palin, it's about like being endorsed by Orlando Bloom for an Oscar nomination. It's
that's
a person
harsh,
that's never in
fair.
The fight. Come and you know, help me out here. But then I say that, but, you know, which would be worse? Palin is, ironically, in a bizarre, tragic way, would have probably not been as bad as Trump. It's just an absolute ridiculous state of affairs.
Well, the thing is, I mean, maybe we're jumping to conclusions here and prejudging the guy, because actually, tangibly, what is there to fear from Donald Trump? Because isn't it all bluster?
The end of the world?
Yeah, well, there's, you know...
Yeah, don't politicians always say, like, crazy stuff to get elected, like, I'm going to cut taxes, I'm going to do all this nice stuff, everybody gets a swimming pool, and then they
Tories
get into power.
Said that they supported the NHS.
Yeah, well,
they'll sell anything.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the Tories, you know, they want to privatise parts of the NHS, which sort of makes sense, because, I mean, you wouldn't have the NHS building its own trucks and stuff. They buy ready-made trucks from Mercedes, and that's effectively a private company providing that NHS service.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the privatisation of the NHS is quite misunderstood in that it began in the Blair years. And people don't realise that. But actually, you know...
No one was more right-wing than Tony Blair.
Well, there you go. Exactly. It's an interesting one. But
I just recently finished a book called The Psychopath Test.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony Blair ticks every box.
Right.
Literally. There's not even one that you go... Maybe not.
Probably, I'm assuming, top of that list is the fact that he really believes those things he says, which... Because you get the feeling my favourite evil people are the ones that just turn it on when they're in, you know, when they're in the mood. It's like a strategic decision.
Does he really believe it? Because, I mean, every time you see him now, he looks so haunted. So haunted. Like,
really,
he stays up all night getting visited by ghosts and stuff. You know what I mean?
It's true.
It's the perpetual Christmas carol for the rest of his life.
Yeah. He is, I mean, you agree with you. I mean, he's a wealthy man. He's world famous. But who'd be Tony Blair now?
Yeah.
You know, so here's the thing. I mean, but we would take President Blair over President Trump any time, wouldn't
we? Although, I mean, like, Sarah Palin, it was great to see her again. Don't see her on TV so much these days. Because, I mean, for all that she's thick, I mean, her contribution to linguistics and the development of the English language is amazing. She comes up with new words every time. Like that word squirmish. She used the word squirmish.
Yeah.
A wonderful word. I mean, it's never existed before, but now it's going straight into my vocabulary.
Yes, it does sound like some kind of complaint of the nether regions, doesn't it?
It's some sort of embarrassing military movement. Squirmish.
But, I mean, look, let's be honest with you. It'll be terrible. It'll be terrible for the world, Donald Trump, President Trump, but great news for you guys as comedians. I mean, you'll be dining out on this.
Oh, I don't know. It was pretty lazy comedy days when Bush was president. Just basically people just repeating what he'd said, no joke, just repeating it. It was pretty bad comedy, but I suppose one silver lining is, you know, if Barack Obama can't get anything that he wanted done because the American system is so paralysed within itself, then neither will Trump. You know, if Barack Obama can't pass a single bill pro healthcare or getting rid of Guantanamo Bay, then what's Trump's chance?
There's
to get
only
through a white only policy.
Well, there's one thing that. Unfortunately, the president can always do with impunity, and that's invade other countries. And I suppose that's the biggest headache with President Trump is just the foreign policy and what that's going to be and the tone of foreign policy. Because
he won't know where any of those countries are.
It's a good point. Here's the thing. Parliament has been debating this week whether or not he should be allowed in the country because of his remarks about Muslims saying, I'd like to just stop Muslims coming to America for a while.
So they want to stop Trump coming here. Isn't that a bit sort of what Trump was saying?
Well, this is it. And as a Scotsman, you must feel a little torn about this because Donald Trump has invested tens of millions of pounds in the Scottish economy.
Which is the Scottish economy.
There you go. So it's the golfing, I think it's two golf complexes, isn't it? It's his own one, the Trump resort, but then also there's another iconic, the old ground or something, one of the other golf courses.
Just what Scotland needs, more golf courses. Amazing.
So here's the thing. I wonder whether all of that good work in terms of the attitude towards America in the last 8 years since Obama is going to be undone. Because my thoughts about Obama in terms of his legacy, tangibly, not a lot has been received. He tried to get some movement on providing Americans with healthcare. There's certainly more healthcare available than there was. I think his greatest legacy is just that he changed the tone of America in the world. And I think America 8 years on is less hated with the vitriol that it was previously. And overnight, that will go if Trump gets into the White House, won't it?
And you can see, Obama's a tangible, is sort of nice, touchy-feely diplomatic foreign policy is sort of tangible. Like just this week with the
Iran.
The sanctions have been lifted. They've stopped their nuclear weapons processing, whatever it was. Whereas Trump would not have got that done.
Yeah,
currently be trying to find it to blow it up.
I mean, there is one flip side, playing devil's advocate, stressing literally the devil on that one. But I wonder whether what America has missed under Obama is a slightly more muscular tone in terms of international affairs. His conciliatory, slightly bookish, academic worldview is welcome here in the chattering
that
classes
one looks
of
more of a
North
pussy
London
than a guy with a book.
Well, there you go. But I just wonder whether actually a slightly more robust and confident tone might make the world a safer place?
Well, he's got a nice tone. He's got a nice tone, but he's still bombing ISIS.
Yeah.
So he's not dropping books on them. He's properly bombing them and killing them.
My goodness.
Which is quite. If you get sort of drones running libraries, that should be an interesting hybrid of the two policies. But it's terrifying that, because obviously, Trump said all these things about there being parts of Birmingham that were a no-go for the police because of Muslims, and Britain has become this soft touch, and the British politicians want to say, oh, you can't come here. But it is terrifying because presumably they know there is a chance that he could become President Bush. Otherwise, they would just say he can't come in.
That's a very, very good question. Now, my last question for you is this one, and it's about McDonald's, because McDonald's have created a new dish, and it's called the McChoco Potato Dish, offering Japanese diners fries with a double chocolate topping. McDonald's is launching the dish, salty and sweet McChoco Potato Treat. If it's a success there, it'll be coming to Britain. And here's my question. Has America obviously has gone mad. Has McDonald's lost it? Is McDonald's over now?
Well, it's only in Japan. We immediately go to America to give them a punch. And to be fair, my immediate thought was, could Trump do any more damage in 8 years than McDonald's has done to the world in the last 50 years, making us obese, lazy, cancer-ridden arseholes that go back to a restaurant time after time after time, despite the fact that we've never left there going, oh, that was nice. So, yeah, maybe we would deserve Trump. People to eat whatever McDonald's puts on a plate. Yeah, we've got some new chips. We've taken a shit on it.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Stick it in my mouth. I don't want cutlery.
And on that strong image of something being stuck in your mouth, I'd like to thank you for listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News with Dave Whitney and Leo Kurse. We'll see you next time. Actually, I'm only kidding. What we're going to do, we're going to play a record, and we've got many more big stories, including how do you make conversation in an Uber taxi? Will we ever end sexism? And how are those New Year's resolutions going? It's Mark Dolan. It's 12:24. Don't go anywhere.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio. Bar Radio presents.
I had been dating a girl for a while. I took her to my dad's house for the weekend. Ooh. And she complimented him on one of his lamps. My dad likes a drink, so the whiskey was free-flowing. My dad and I went to go outside for a cigarette, and when we came back, she was wearing the lampshade on her head. She winked at my dad and started rubbing his bald patch and said to call her Miss Lightfingers. I'm assuming that was a drunk cabaret name, but who the hell knows?
Drunk cabaret name, yeah!
Every Thursday.
Johnny and I know.
From 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah. Johnny and Ainella, absolute classic act on FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. We're going to play Shields now and Alive, and there will be more consuming of the week's news after this.
It kills me, I'll keep it alive. Alive.
Keep it alive.
Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Now, my comedian guests, Dave Whitney and lovely Leo Kearse, are just swooning and fawning over my laptop, which is an Apple MacBook 12-inch Retina display.
I thought there were no adverts on this station.
I wish we were carrying a little bit of Apple sponsorship, but hashtag never say never. And it takes us to our next story, in fact, which is the suggestion by one of the people behind Twitter that an app is created in which you only receive your emails once a day. So essentially you have this app on your phone and you just choose what time it is. So it might just be midday or 7 in the evening, and that's when your mail comes in, exactly like how the postman used to do it. Chaps, could you survive with just one hit of email a day?
I'd fucking love it. Oh, I've sworn twice now. I'm never coming
back. You are so rock and roll. Foo Bar is unregulated. You're allowed to do that. And God bless you for doing it. Every time you swear, the boss, Duncan, he does a little fist pump. Because it's one of the many USPs of this platform. So God bless you.
Well, I'll try not to get too carried away with it now you've given me free gratis. I'd love it, but the problem is with modern communication, it's not when the... Because I can choose not to look at my phone whenever I like. I can just look at my phone once a day. That is within your power. The problem is back in the day when you had answer phones and post, but when somebody sent something, they didn't expect a reply immediately, so you had time to think about it. Now with things like WhatsApp, which you berated me for having, said that I was too old for having.
Well, you are. I mean, you're basically... If you're over 30 on WhatsApp, you're grooming someone. That's what it is.
Oh dear. Oh,
I think so. Unless it's your dear.
What a horrible moment of self-realization.
I know those remarks only work if they're not true. So this is awkward now. But so yeah, so you because of course that's the thing. It's the various platforms. You now have to check your Facebook messages. You have to check your DMs on Twitter, then you check your email, and then there's also actual posts that arrive.
And they're all the same thing. When WhatsApp, somebody said bullied me into getting WhatsApp, and said it's like text messages, but it's free. And I went, well, my text messages are free. They're in the contract. Well,
correct.
Why do I need another platform for another thing for me to have to check?
Well, this is what the guys at Twitter are concerned about, and they think that we should have a digest of our correspondence that happens once a day. I think it would be very good, Leo Kearse, for our spiritual health. Discuss.
Well, I don't know. I just think it's so exciting when you get a message. You know, you get that little notification.
By the way, Leo's standing up.
Thing.
Leo's standing.
Yeah, trying it out.
He had a little half time talk with himself.
Yeah, the producer through the window is telling me to put my mic up. At least I hope that's what he's saying, and not just calling me a wanker. That's it.
He does. He enjoys swearing here at FUBAR as well. So sorry. Yes, yeah, so you get the little icon comes up.
Yeah. You get a little like electronic envelope, even because it's still an electronic envelope, even though it never comes in an actual like manila envelope made in the Philippines or whatever. And you get that, and it's exciting. He's trying it on the floor now.
Dave Whitney, this has all got very,
radio.
Very Howard Stern. Whitney is now naked and on the floor, and he's using the vibrations from my voice to please himself.
Yeah, they are exactly
which I'm
the
very
right
flattered,
tenor.
Very flattered about. I can see you haven't let yourself go. It's all that WhatsApp. It keeps you young, doesn't it? So that's right. You receive your mail and continue.
Oh yeah, you get that little icon, and then like you go in, and you're like, oh, this is exciting. Then you go in, and either use your thumbprint scanner if Mark Dolan has shown you how to use it,
correct?
Or you type in a very long-winded 4-digit PIN, and then you get into your phone. You open up the application, you see it. It's so exciting. There's somebody asking if you've been missold insurance, and yes, I've been missold insurance.
Well, it's obviously a concern. People think about it because I suppose it's the volume of it, and we have no way of filtering. So, you can spot junk mail when it comes through the letterbox, but you can't on your inbox.
Gmail is great because it does really good filtering. I know we aren't supposed to have adverts, but yeah, Gmail has got amazing spam filtering, so only get the like proper emails coming through.
See, I think that's disappointing, actually, because I quite value some of those penis enlargement emails, and they have, I must say, enhanced the quality. Yeah, whatever happened to that?
Everybody's now got a large penis.
I think they've moved on to crowdfunding or something like that. I don't know where they're at now. So you obviously would take this app, you would put this app on your phone, Dave Whitney.
No, I think I'm perfectly capable of just looking at my phone less.
See, that's a big... I don't have that in my arsenal, Leo, because I'm addicted to my iPhone.
What do you have in your arsenal? It's,
well, that's a long story. You'll have to buy me a drink before I can tell you that.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that app at all. It would just, you'd feel horrible. You'd be like, what am I missing? And then you just open the... Because I take it you can override the app and open the email anyway, and then...
There's a sort of breathalyzer test to check that you're not opening it while drunk.
Oh, that's what we need. Just getting drunk these days. Like, you don't just wake up feeling like, did I make a dick of myself in the pub last night? You're like, did I make a dick of myself preserved forever in front of everybody I know on Facebook?
There's that, but my personal way of fucking myself up while drunk is buying things online. I'm never as happy as when I get that eBay email 4 days after a drunken night that tells me I've been outbid on something I didn't want and didn't remember bidding on.
And do you ever get like strange things arriving in the post?
Oh, quite regularly. Mainly well, look NFL at that merchandise.
That shirt as well.
Well, this cap was one of those things. Keep a straight face when it arrives and go, yeah, just put it around the back.
Well, here's ultimately the question, which is your smartphone, ultimately, does it improve? Well, has it made your life better or worse ultimately? If you could press a button and it just did, that technology didn't exist and people had to write letters and send it in the post and people had to leave a message on a landline phone, would your life actually be less stressful?
It was sort of, in the old days, it was sort of nice. You had a lot of time when you could relax. Now you never sort of relax because you're always getting
pinged
out.
I think I work for my phone. I'm pretty sure that is my boss, my phone. That's why I'm happy not taking it out of my pocket.
I wonder whether this conversation in many ways is academic for us, because as self-employed entertainers, the phone is the source of work. It is the spring of employment for us. And therefore, we kind of value it, and it's a no-brainer. As you say, it's a good line that we work for it. It's the boss. But I wonder whether if you have an actual job, all this technology is actually a distraction.
I think so. I mean, my reason that I've got into Instagram lately, and I am wasting hours a day staring at female bodybuilders. I'm never going to get that time back, and it's enjoyable.
That's time well spent. They're amazing human beings.
They are amazing.
I love watching the weightlifting. Like, I love to see a good clean snatch.
Yeah.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
There's absolutely no reply to that. You're listening to Leo Kurse, who suddenly, out of nowhere, got very blue. Such a dark horse. Now, here's another question for you, and it's a bit of a hard-hitting one, because we obviously have quite a lot of issues going on at the moment. We have the Chinese economy is on the precipice, on the edge of self-destruction. We've got tension, of course, continued tension in the Middle East and Syria. We have a diplomatic row with the Russians and Vladimir Putin over the recent findings regarding the murder of Alexander Litvinenko. These are all key things, but perhaps number one this week is the fact that food worth £50 just sits in our freezers.
Not in my freezer. There's a bottle of vodka and air.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you know what? There's a part of me that would like to live with you.
We can make it happen.
A stud pad.
And we can round film at Whitney's. It as a new sitcom.
It will be like a really... We like Friends, but just with less sort of energetic, attractive people. Definitely feel women. Leo Kurse, you could be like Kramer next door in Seinfeld. crashing in every so often. To provide comic-like relief.
I'm impressed somebody's got air in their freezer, because my freezer is just entirely filled with like that sort of weird snow that you get in freezers that you never put in there, but it always just comes in somehow.
Well, yes, it absolutely does, even if it's a frost freeze. So many families admit they don't make the most of the food in the freezer. 18% of people cook with frozen items more than 3 times a week. Experts recommend frozen foods should be consumed within 9 months. Chef Jamie Oliver said most of us don't use freezers to their full potential. Mine is, so in my relationship with my lovely lady wife, I bin stuff. And she keeps stuff. She's a hoarder. And so our freezer is like, I mean, there are brands in there that, like 70s brands. You're like, are those guys still in business? You know, Ross Foods. Do you remember them? Honestly, it's quite shocking. And
Gateway's own peas.
Yeah, who knew? The freezer and the fridge in some ways, it is a reflection of one's own personality, isn't it? You open, if I go into someone's house, the first one of the first things that would be a bit weird. The first thing I do is sort of say hi and sit down.
Straight to the freezer.
Yeah, because I've really got to soften the blow. Otherwise, it's just very direct. Mm. But once
it's
I have that
a lot
moment,
of people are keeping their Wi-Fi code. I find
just oh yeah, that's a good point. So I just open this fridge and I always have a little look in, and it gives me a little snapshot. Because yeah. Here's the thing, people's bookshelves, that's all public, that's all there for people are conscious that that is a public reflection of them, but no one really thinks about the fridge and how it reflects on them. So therefore you get secret, there are secrets in your average fridge. So how about you, Leo Kurse?
Well, I share a flat with, I think there's about 11 of us, because this is London, and despite technically being yes. a yuppie for the next few months before I turn 40, I've got to live in some sort of shanty town, you know, all crammed into the same, like, you know, we don't have to share. Actually, some of them do. Some of them share rooms.
That's
in
remarkable.
Like 2016,
do they know
in
each
a
other?
Western country. Well, they do now. Like they've seen each other naked and stuff.
Do they do that thing which people do, where you sleep? What is it, at opposite ends? Where
top and tails.
Well, top and tails. Which I think is strange, because that's no guarantee that sex won't happen.
No, yeah, it just goes
in some. In some ways, the erogenous organs are closer together if you do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually makes more in the geometry of sex. You're quicker in.
Is that a podcast you do?
Just speaking from experience. And that's why we don't room together, Dave Whitney. Count yourself lucky. So therefore, have you got labelled milk? Does it say Leo's milk?
No, but I'm the only person, because again, this is London 2016. I'm the only person that drinks milk that comes out of a cow. Everybody else drinks like oat milk, almond milk, fucking koala bear milk. I don't know what they drink. Like, it's all this like weird like milk substitute stuff that costs about £5 for a jug. So I'm the only one drinking drinking actual milk that comes from an actual udder, like nature intended.
Yeah, yes. I mean, yeah. Who thought that milk came out of nuts?
I know. It reminds me, because of allergies and stuff, it reminds me of that great Alan Carr joke where he just said, in the good old days, they just died.
Yeah.
And it's definitely right. So your fridge in some ways is not, it can't really be a reflection of just your personality, because it's a shared space.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But does it give you
of my cheapness.
Does it give you an overview of the whole vibe of the entire property, the whole residence?
Yeah.
And it's too many things, too many people.
There's a split between the men and the women. The men have got sort of beer in there and maybe some butter or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas the women, it's all these like frilly sort of vegetables, curly kale, all this kind of stuff. Like vegetables I never heard of. We didn't eat them growing up. We had things like carrots and peas.
Yes. You've only got butter but nothing to put it on. I assume it's just there for a sort of last tango in Paris use.
Because, I mean, that's it. It ends up, we do have bread, but not in the fridge.
I like your anger about kale.
It's bread.
It's hard to get angry about kale, but you just achieved it. And you sort of, essentially, you're sort of casting these vegetables. There's a sort of strata of vegetable. It's a sort of bohemian, middle-class sort of aspirational vegetable.
It isn't, ironically, like in Scotland, we've got it in Scotland, it's fed to sheep.
Right.
It's fed to sheep, and now, you know, people are following these diet gurus and stuff a little bit like sheep.
More evidence of the contempt with which the Scots hold vegetables, just generally.
I just want these Japanese chocolate chips.
That's it, you can put that broccoli down the drain.
Yeah. Give to the fucking sheep.
Aye,
I can swear on this, it's fine.
You're absolutely allowed to do that. So there you go. Well, is there anything in your fridge at the moment for dinner?
No.
Really?
No.
So you're like a gumshoe detective, aren't you? From like a, you know, one of those sort of classic sort of, you know, sort of detective gritty thing.
Well, as a comic,
where you
I'm
live
out
alone.
Every evening. I'd like to be more domestic. In fact, it was my New Year's resolution, which has got as far as the fact that I now own a George Foreman grill, but I haven't worked out how to get it out of the box.
You don't have the strength, do you?
Yeah, because I'm not a boxer. But
Foreman was good at boxing. Am I right?
Nicely done. Nicely done.
It's difficult for you to keep up the clean snatch type quality.
It is. You've basically pinched yourself into a corner there, I'm afraid. You are. You're a victim of your own success.
But I'd like to cook more for myself. But, you know, we're comedians. You know, you're on the road. You've got... I think I've got a ratio of about 4 hours motorway to every 1 hour on stage. I know. The only place I can eat is motorway service stations.
Yes, indeed. And you've probably become quite an expert, because most comics know all of the best service stations. And I don't. I'm always torn. But whether do you take the Waitrose one or the Marks and Spencers one?
Ooh, KFC. KFC, is that the mark of a good
And Burger King or Mickey D's?
Oh, Burger King.
But McDonald's have started doing these fancy burgers, because you know, like there's people do really nice burgers now. In the old days, McDonald's was successful because it was the only place you could get burgers unless you made it yourself out of some kind of, like, I don't know what they're made out of, beef or something. But like now, you've got like Gourmet Burger Kitchen, you've got the Five Guys, there's other ones. There's other ones as well.
What's that? There's one that's everywhere in central London, and it's it's called the Proper Burger or something, and it's a famous brand, but I've now luckily forgotten.
So now McDonald's have had to up their game. They've brought out these signature burgers, and I haven't had one, but Darius Davies has had one, and he says it's delicious.
Right, so it's kind of they've finally gone hipster, McDonald's, have they?
They've gone proper.
Byron is the one I was thinking of as well. Of course, they're everywhere.
Good value.
Byron light, floppy shirts, writing poetry, fucking women, and having a burger.
There you go. Oh, well, what a line.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Now I have another question to ask you, and it is this, and it relates to technology, actually. Bosses can now read staff's private messages on social media. Examples of that would be WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter, during work hours. Is this the end of the idea that social media is a private platform?
Yes.
When was it ever a private platform? We essentially just gave up our entire life. The second that Facebook and Twitter arrived, people are just suddenly sharing the most disgusting facts. And so keep it to yourself.
We don't realise. People still think. They know it's public, but they forget. And it still feels private.
Yeah,
so for example,
a private message. Because it's like a chat. It's like a chat in the corner of a pub.
Well, I could tweet you and say, thanks for today. Do you want to go for a beer sometime?
Yeah.
You know, and... or something, and you know, I feel like we're having a conversation, but like millions of people could look at it.
Yeah. But it's the mess. You know, if you're using Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or something at work, I mean, the idea that, like, you know, your bosses can look at that's hard. What else are they going through my shit to see what I've had for dinner, see what's in my fridge?
Like, it's so rude. You since like the second half of the show,
we have really got.
I think
control.
It's Dave Whitney. it's ever since you stood up.
Race.
You are famously angrier when standing.
Yeah, I'm sitting down
because you reached full sort of Adonis thing.
I think I got a lot bluer when I took my clothes off.
That's a good point. It has that inevitable effect. It's amazing. I'm very surprised about this. European court rules have said that firms have the right to check whether staff are doing their job. The case centres on a Romanian engineer fired for chatting online with his fiancée. The ruling is binding on countries, including Britain, that ratified the European Convention on Human Rights. I suppose it's not really a question about social media, is it? It's a question of the extent to which your employer owns you while you're at work, isn't it? Because that's the thing. It's not the fact that you're it's the fact that you're not doing your job, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's the big brother culture.
We've all had jobs. I think, well, I have a job anyway.
Yes.
And like,
oh, yes.
You get all your work done in about 2 or 3 hours, and then the rest of the time is, you know, and if you didn't get to like chat to friends and mess around, like you wouldn't get the work done. Like,
I've
if
always
you sit
always
there and just
thought that.
Leadenly plod through it. Like you don't do the job as well as what I told my boss.
No, there's a very very strange culture in whenever I've worked in offices, which is that you're right. Your work is done by 2 p.m, but you sit there till 6. And then a terrible thing happens, which is you're contracted to work till 6, and then there's someone called Ian who stays till 6:20, and he does that every... So he sets the precedent, and so 6:20 becomes the official, that's when the day is over. And then if you leave at 6, it's like, where are you going? It's like, well, I was contracted to. And it becomes normalised, and I think this is how companies exploit people and get more out of them, is from the unspoken rules rather than the overt ones.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody from America, he's an American, and
he
was saying
unusual.
He gets 9 days holiday a year.
Yeah.
9 days.
That's amazing.
And also said,
I've had 9 days holiday this week.
It's a concerning thought, I must say. The other thing I want to ask you about, and it's a story about how we handle crime and criminals in this country. Britain's most prolific criminal has cost taxpayers £3 million, because he has spent 25 years behind bars, and he's notched up his 630th offence. Patrick Ryan, who is 60, is believed to have the longest list of convictions in Britain. He clocked up his 630th by eating a meal at a cafe and not paying. Old school. A career criminal, spent 25 years in jail, also urinated against a cafe wall. Very specific crime. He really had it in for those guys.
Yeah. Inside wall or outside wall?
In fairness, I actually know the cafe in question. The service there is terrible, and I have many times wanted to urinate against the wall just as a kind of dirty liquid protest. So I feel his pain. £3 million. We could have given this man, like 30 years ago, we could have given him £1 million, and we'd save money. Here's £1 million. Just please be nice now. Well, here's £1 million to be pleasant and don't be a criminal.
It's interesting because I used to work in policing as a criminal intelligence analyst, and the cost of problem families to a borough, like the cost to the taxpayer, not just to in terms of court costs and policing and criminal justice system and jail and stuff like that, but also social services,
yeah,
schooling, because the kids are always in, you know, pupil referral units or need special tuition. There's also housing, the benefits, and you know, the lot of, you know, health problems and stuff. You know, mental health issues and stuff like that, you know, not to generalise, but they do. The cost to that, to a borough, can easily be like £250,000, £300,000 a year. So, I mean, it dwarfs the cost of this, you know, the Britain's worst criminal. And when I say worst criminal, I mean he's a really bad criminal. What sort of criminal gets caught? He's a career criminal. That's like, he's got the worst career. Like, a career criminal wouldn't get caught. He'd get fired. If that was he should get, his boss should be checking his messages.
It's true.
Firing him.
Is that why there's so many comedians in London that call themselves career comedians and haven't been caught being funny?
Yeah.
Yes.
He is the same.
We know those. We know those people. But it's obviously inefficient. It obviously doesn't work. I mean, UKIP, their policy is to build more prisons and to put more people in jail, because they say there's a small percentage of the population who are just bad, and if you lock them away, we'll all be much safer. And it certainly has been reported anecdotally by the police that in some streets and some neighbourhoods, you're looking at one or two individuals who have just wreaked havoc and every night go out on a spree. And when those people get locked up, suddenly it's like there's no more crime anymore. So this idea that there are thousands of criminals out there nearby is not necessarily the case. It could be one or two rotten eggs in the barrel. Will we ever get past this idea that we're better if they're just kept inside a building?
Well, I think people are taking more intelligent approaches. I mean, in the US, they've got Diamond Districts, which is pioneered in Philadelphia. And it's doing the thing where you actually take some of the money and you pay people cash incentives, usually cash, to live good lives and, like, you know, make sure their kids go to school. You get, like, you know, if they're a problem family, they get, like, bribes to make sure the kids go to school or make sure... whatever it is.
Bribes famously work with children, don't they? I mean, I'm not a father myself, but
this is going to the parents, and it does actually work. I mean, it's obviously there's a sort of moral, you know, some sort of moral debate to be had. Are we rewarding people for being bad people?
Yeah. For threatening to be a bad person, than person. You're bad from the get-go, you get nothing. Yeah. You've got to at least tease them with the idea that you could really fuck things up.
I wonder, I mean, do you feel safer just with the idea that people do get locked up or not?
I suppose dangerous people being taken off the streets is you know, it's better than not being taken off the streets, I suppose, if somebody is considered dangerous. But somebody being taken off the streets because they've cheated on their tax return, I'm not any safer, because you know, essentially their crime was to cost the state money, and their punishment is to cost the state money. It seems rather pointless. You know, like most things, it seems to come down to education. We have this situation that from the get-go, you know, when you got screaming kids on the bus and somebody tells them to shut up, they're like, you can't tell me to shut up, you can't do this, you can't do that. Whereas back in the old days, the quaint old days we always talk about when everything was perfect, kids would be scared of an adult and they'd shut up and be shamed, and there doesn't seem to be that culture. And while we have this precipitation of
right. Sounds so UKIP, but it, without it, it's sort of starting with the education of it. It doesn't matter how long you put away somebody who wants to urinate against a wall, he'll come out and urinate on another wall. All it's done is cost us £3 million to house him for a couple of years.
Well, I wonder whether, I mean, the problem with prison is that, you know, if you try to rehabilitate people, you know, it's very much after the fact, isn't it? The horse has bolted. This person is, you know, is in a community, in an environment which is criminal. If most of, or many of their friends and family members will just be criminals too. So even when they get out, they're straight back into it. I wonder whether counterintuitively the thing to do is to actually throw more money. I mean, this guy's had £3 million, but in a way, throw more money at the prisons to make them more rehabilitative and not so crowded so that there's actually space in which to be educated and learn and become a better person. I wonder whether that will be money well spent, because at the moment it seems like, you know, you look at the prison service and it's low-hanging fruit for any minister that wants to inflict cuts.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, prison can be good because it takes the person out of the situation and the people that are enabling and encouraging them to commit crimes. But it can also be a sort of cheese and wine event for networking for criminals.
Yeah.
So, like my friend, I don't know if I should say his name, but my friend was in jail for not a particularly nasty crime. He was a football hooligan, so he's fighting another football hooligan.
That's good. That's laudable.
Well, that's like two. There's well no done. Victim there. You know what I mean? There's no victim. It's two guys fighting. You know what I mean? But he got sent to jail. And when he was in jail, the paedophiles and rapists were kept like completely secure, completely segregated from the other prisoners, so they couldn't, you know, because normally they get, you know, stabbed and beaten up and whatever. Mm. So they were on like the floor above, and they'd be shouting taunts down at the other criminals because they knew they were so safe.
Right, see, that's weird, isn't it? It's a bonkers, bonkers world. Now, gentlemen, on that criminal note, I've got one last question for you before I release you into the wild. And it's about small talk, because according to the Mail Online, an Australian comedian, Danny Shawn, has mocked passengers with a hilarious meme based on the way in which people make up conversation and also small talk with Uber drivers. It's a short sketch video. It mocks the overused lines passengers use when ride sharing. Shit people say in Ubers is what it's called. It's been viewed 40,000 times. Commonly asked questions include, has it been busy? How long have you been an Uber driver? Etc, etc. Now, this isn't just related to Uber, but generally, chaps, do you talk to people that are serving you, or are they invisible? Because what I'd love to be able to do, if I get in the back of a cab, my dream would be just to sit there and not speak. Only because it's downtime for me. I've got small children. It's nice just to be in the back of a cab. And actually, those animated chats with a taxi driver can often be quite wearing. So, but I don't have the hardness of heart to just sit there and not speak. And for them to say, how's your day going? And for me to just go, fine. Yeah,
stop. Your hand
talk up. To the hand. Yeah. Instead, I'm like, great. And we get into a long chat about how long. My weakness is talking about how many miles the car has done, whether it's reliable. You know, whether this brand.
It's always a Prius. Always a Prius.
It's the choice of taxi drivers.
Have you thought
drivers.
About taking your own limos? You've got that screen. You can press a button and it just goes up. It just goes. You can take your own.
Mark would travel with his own one.
Yeah,
it would be
take
worth
your own
it.
Screen and just make the noise go.
Well, where do you guys stand on? I mean, sometimes I'm very chatty with people who are serving me because I find it brightens up what could be an otherwise dull transaction, you know. But then there are times when you just want a bit of me time. How do you handle it, Leo? You're a chatty person generally, aren't you?
I'm Scottish. I'm not going to pay for a taxi. I get the bus.
Yeah.
So and this then obviously being Scottish on a bus, I talk to everybody.
Yeah, including the taxi driver.
Shaking a can in their face. You know what I mean?
Why is there a taxi driver on this bus?
That would be the bus driver. So how about you, Dave? Do you strike up conversation with the Uber driver?
Well, it depends on my mood, and I think it is part of their job to sense out what my mood is. You know, if you're if you're a hairdresser or a driver, and somebody gets into your chair or into the back of your cab and obviously wants to leave him alone, that be left alone. I think that's fair enough. Listen to the radio and you know, but if somebody's happy to chat, you know. But there's not. I was in one the other day where I think I started about eight sentences and realised it was bullshit that I was about to come out with. Sort of like, have you got long?
Oh yeah. When do you finish tonight? You got a long night ahead.
Have you had many? Oh,
no. You couldn't bring yourself to do
just
it.
Just open up with a question going, I hope you're drunk.
It has to be done. Gentlemen, I can only thank you for your time. You've been listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News. Dave Whitney, please may I ask you for your social media handle so that the fan base can grow?
D. Whitney.
There you go. At D. Whitney. Very, very nice. And Leo Curse?
It's Comedy Leo.
It most certainly is. And are you gigging this week? Are we performing somewhere in London's famous West End? Where are we at?
Pun Run tonight down at the Cavendish.
Tell me about Pun Run, because it's a great idea. It's amazing. Now, this is perfect because you do puns anyway.
I'm the UK pun champion.
You're not.
I am, yeah.
How did I not mention that?
They've got the UK pun championships coming up, and I was going to enter. I thought, like, as soon as I'm the wit, like, I'm going to be in it, you know what I mean?
Automatically.
Yeah, automatically. But apparently not, and I forgot to apply, and now I'm not in it.
You're not even getting to defend. That's ridiculous.
That is a disgrace.
That is absolutely disgrace.
Can you, I mean, I would never get someone to, like, do jokes on that, but if you got a classic pun that you love, whether it's yours or someone else's?
Yeah, well, it's mine, luckily, I hope. Marvin Gaye used to keep a sheep in my vineyard. He'd heard it through the grapevine. All right, thank you very much.
Leo Curse, Dave Whitney, thank you.